Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMel with you with The Positive Mind. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, where we bring you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And as promised, today we focus our program on phlebotomy. Yes, phlebotomy. It's in the studio with me, Stephanie Dombra. Stephanie, phlebotomist. I am a phlebotomist because, well, all week we've been a phlebotomist because we've been studying one thing. And a phlebotomist does one thing only. They study the science of kissing.
That's right.
That's right. How could kissing be a science? It's so natural. How could it be a science? How could it be, you know, what is it? What's so great about kissing? What's so important about kissing? It's just one of those dirty things that people do. It's one of those things that people do and knew. Remember when you were in high school, grammar school, and you thought about adults kissing and you went, ugh, what's going on there? It's disgusting. Well, the truth of it is disgusting. Disgusting if you think about it in terms of germs. Because we like to think of kissing as this kind of a pure, beautiful form of love and an expression of purity and beauty and passion. But it's all about bugs. Yep, has a lot to do with bugs. So we did a little investigation, and we found quite a few very interesting things that all of you phlebotomists, meaning all of you who are studying with us, will become an expert by the end of today. It's fascinating. I mean, it's more than fascinating because, you know, we keep wondering about ourselves as humans and the way we function. Why do we shake hands? You know, why do we shake hands? Why do you want to shake hands with somebody? Well, you know, the custom developed out of a need to show that you weren't carrying a weapon. So one of the things you do when you shuck the hands of somebody, you say, I have no weapon. See, it's a human thing. You don't see many monkeys shaking hands. You don't see turtles shaking hands, although I think it would be cute. You know, you don't see many of the primates or horses. They don't shake hands. Humans shake hands because humans carried weapons, because they may have a stick that they're going to hit you with. And you want to know, hey, what's in that other hand? Nope. Okay. So kissing seems to be a simple thing. It's, what is it? Well, let's find out some of the things that are discovered by kissing and where it comes from originally. Let's look back in time. Steph, where do you think the kissing originated? Where do you think it comes from? What do you think, anthropologically speaking?
Well, one theory is that when mothers would feed their babies, just like birds, they would chew on their food and then give it to the babies by mouth. So that started the process of getting close and doing gentle things with the mouth. And another theory is,
you know, well, I'll bet you in that masticated food, there's a lot more going on than just the food is masticated, because the food is also carrying the saliva from the mother, the immune system from the mother, the hormones from the mother. Everything is being carried. It's all mixed in because saliva has a lot of activity in it.
Right. And one other theory that also seems to make sense, just as in the primates, in the great apes, they groom and they actually bite off the bugs and parasites from each other's skin and fur. And so this idea that we as humans, by kissing and grooming, it's another way of our taking off the, we'll call it bugs, pathogens, parasites, whatever you want to call it, from each other. So it's another way of kind of cleaning out the potential dangers.
Well, on one hand, and yet there is cytomegaloviruses, right? Now, cytomegalovirus, this is really fascinating. A cytomegalovirus is generally harmless unless introduced during pregnancy. Now, this is really strange. The British researchers now think the practice of kissing one's mate evolved as a means to spread and build immunity to the saliva-dwelling pathogen called cytomegalovirus. Now, the cytomegalovirus kind of lives in the saliva, and it looks like, remember, so when you were a kid, remember this, talked about this feeling of, ooh, it's disgusting. Well, yeah, it's really taking place. The practice is designed to spread sickness. See, here was the idea. The idea was, I'm going to give you a little dose of the cytomegalovirus by me, the man who is, you know, if the man is kissing the woman or a man is, the idea is I'm going to introduce this slightly into you. So now one person takes on the other person's cytomegalovirus, and they slowly, over time, build an immunity to it. Therefore, when they become pregnant, the chance of them having the cytomegalovirus take over and destroy the child, which is likely to do, is very poor. Which means the following. If you are kissing your mate before you get pregnant, for 4 or 5 months before you get pregnant, the kissing escalates and escalates and escalates. Of course it does. That's how you got pregnant. You went from a little peck to a little deeper kiss, a deeper kiss, a deeper kiss, then sex, then pregnancy. Now this is carrying an imprint of the cytomegalovirus of the partner with you. Then by the time you have your baby has now got this immune system working well. If, however, a woman who is pregnant should kiss another man with a different cytomegalovirus, it is possible it could actually harm the fetus. And this is mind-boggling. So the escalation of a physical relationship and the reason to have monogamy, right, especially with pregnancy, gets a little deeper. You know, we would think polygamy is kind of the way nature made it to be. But not if you're kissing. No, no, no. You can make love to many, but kiss one only. According to nature. Cytomegalovirus. You can take a look at that. That's kind of amazing stuff, don't you think, Stephanie?
Absolutely. I wonder if you kiss several people before you get pregnant, do you actually get, so
you
to speak, inoculated
right.
from them as well? So we have to do further research on that, because that is interesting.
Yeah, and what about that dollar a kiss? Remember those things that used to be booths? In churches, they used to have this. I remember when I was a kid.
At the carnivals. Well, it wasn't when I went, but maybe you went there and saw that.
Right. It was last week. Downtown. A dollar a kiss. Kissing is passion and romance. It keeps people together. You know, many people, as they get older, they have a relationship and they stop kissing. You stop. Something about it, you know, as you get older. There's something about the taste and flavor of your partner that is no longer attractive in the same exchanging of saliva way. It doesn't become as appealing. I don't want to get gross about this. But let's look at some of the origin of kissing and what kissing does for you, okay? Initially, what do you get from kissing somebody? What's besides the thrill of it? Well, what happens hormonally, Steph?
Well, from a male has testosterone in his saliva. It increases as he has, you know, sexual desire for his partner, and so he passes that into her mouth. And so this helps her probably also have increased sex drive. So he's
well, with testosterone, when it's passed on to a woman's testosterone is responsible for her own sexual stimulation, right? We think of women as having, you know, we want them to have female hormones, but testosterone is very important for sexual activity for women, isn't it?
Of course.
Well, not of course, because I don't think people know this. Okay? Is it true? If a woman loses all of her testosterone, if she goes through menopause and has zero testosterone, is it less likely that she'll have a sex drive than if she does have testosterone?
It's in principle, but I don't think in practice, Armand. There's too many studies that have shown even with low testosterone, women can still really enjoy sex and have a sex drive depending on the circumstance.
And how about no testosterone? Do you know any studies about people with no testosterone? That I'm curious about, because I've seen the men with no testosterone have no sex drive at all.
Right, but things outside us can increase it. So it's hard to say that just because you have absolutely no testosterone, which I don't think is possible, there would be a problem in the body for other reasons. But I think that, of course, you could still increase it. There's other ways, stimulation, external things, context, all that plays into a person's sex drive.
So one of the things that happened during kissing is there's an exchange of testosterone, male to female, male to male, right? Even female to female, I assume there is some exchange that takes place. And what does testosterone do? It kind of sparks the sexual interest. But there are other things that take place during the kiss, the pheromones. There's scent, there's smell. You know, kissing somebody who smokes is like licking an ashtray. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean it's unappealing.
Well, it probably blocks a lot of things, though.
Uh-huh.
The cigarette smoke in the mouth.
And might stimulate a lot of things. You know, because, I mean, people were kissing when they were smoking for years and years and years. Cary Grant and I think it was Vivian Leigh in one of their famous kissing movies were both smokers. You know, so, I mean, it blocks, but smell, scent, very important. The scent of your breath, you know, the smell of your breath, the way it says, not just whether it's good or bad, but it carries messages. What are the messages?
Well, unconsciously, we don't really do this and are aware of it, but we assess the other person, the other partner. So a female will assess a man and try to determine, probably unconsciously, if he's going to be a really good partner to, you know, have a child with.
By his breath.
By his breath.
Well, it's not really
she'll
his
get
breath.
Sense.
It's by that whole experience.
It's not by the breath, like you say. Those pheromones are really, they go undetected.
Mm-hmm.
And they're passing through us during kissing. And so she is getting a sense, okay, I think immunologically he would be a good choice.
And if not, also vitality. Through the pheromones, you could also tell whether a person is vital.
Healthy, if
healthy,
they have good
right.
teeth, if
mm-hmm.
they taste good. There's probably a lot of things that go on. And in many studies they've done, even with college students, kissing is a deal breaker for many people. They might be romantically interested and have a good time. And then when they kiss, and you can hear people talk about this all the time. I'll hear different stories. Well, no, he didn't kiss right, so that was it. The relationship ends. So she's assessing something, and then he's assessing whether or not she's fertile, whether or not she's healthy as well, based on her breath or
now,
or the pheromones that pass from her to him unconsciously.
So very often a man will say or a woman will say to a man, you know, you need to do something about your kissing. You have to brush your teeth. You have to gargle. You have to, you know, she's trying to get turned on. She's saying it's in your mouth. I know it's in your mouth, but I don't know what it is. And it's not necessarily the sweetness of the breath. It's not necessarily his bad teeth or the garlic he eats. Because you could run into somebody with a stomach load of garlic and find their kiss wonderful, whereas you run into somebody else. And if just the pheromones are wrong, it's almost, you can't tell exactly what it is. You can't tell, why is it your kiss is not turning me on, is a deep question. But adults try what adults try. They go for the obvious. Now, men also assess a woman's fertility, where she is in her fertility cycle, without even knowing it, through the kiss. So the kiss is kind of an amazing little mechanism that we've had for years.
And probably what's another piece of her fertility, I would say her lips might even get even more fuller, because I know the skin of a woman changes. And her complexion and everything about that part of her body shows in some kind of way a man can assess that. So probably the lips are related to that whole process.
In working with people as a couple, Stephanie, when you work with the people doing sex therapy or something, trying to help them improve their sensual lives, does it always focus around what you're supposed to do to make it better? I mean, what if somebody just can't stand the smell of somebody else? What about that?
Well, you really do have to try to work with all those factors. A lot of times people don't kiss after many years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's often reported that kissing, above all other sexual acts, is the most intimate. You know, you're really close up with the person. You kind of can't hide in a way. So, you know, you could do some things about certain scents of a person, perfume, depends on all those kind of factors. But something about the intimacy of kissing is very, very, goes very deep with relationships.
And I think what's important to understand is that nobody's wrong. If there's something, if there's a turnoff, it's not that anybody's wrong. It's like, it's a mismatch of chemistry for a moment, and that chemistry changes. You see, a woman, and going through her own menstrual world, will at some times find a man appealing, and at other times find him not appealing, just as a man will at certain times in his life and during his cycles find somebody appealing and not find her appealing at other times. Before he got married, he kissed her like crazy. After he got married, he found her, you should pardon the expression, distasteful. So what happened? You see, it's not that they change, it's that we change, that our own bodies have a rhythm and a sense to it. And as I was advising somebody earlier today who was telling me, I don't know what happened, I just feel turned off to him, I said, give it time. Time. See what happens to you. Don't run away just because you can't stand it now. Give it time. See what happens over time. There's some doctors. There's the American Dental Association has said that that kissing does, in fact, looks like it helps keep the teeth cleaner. Cuts down on tooth decay. What a funny thing. Makes sense.
Okay, well, that's a kind of interesting thing because I think if you're kissing, you're really developing a lot of saliva, extra saliva, and that probably is one way of cleaning the teeth. So that would be really interesting to determine if people that kiss a lot have cleaner teeth and less plaque.
Well, saliva itself is a big deal. You know, saliva itself is another, it's such an important part of it. In the neurochemistry of kissing, we found other things that take place. One thing that takes place is cortisol levels, right? Cortisol levels, now cortisol. Cortisol is what is like our tension hormone. It's really not a hormone, it's a neurotransmitter. When you're tense, cortisol peaks. And if you have cortisol for too much, for too long, you begin to break down from the stress. Cortisol is a stress hormone. Kissing reduces cortisol. So, of course, it makes sense, because if you're kissing, just think about your breathing. You can't be doing very heavy breathing when you're kissing, because you've got somebody else's mouth there. It's an exchange. It's an oxygen-carbon dioxide exchange that takes place between the two of you. And so your breathing slows. In effect, even though you may feel heated up, your breathing slows. I know you know the thing we didn't study is, what is the exchange of gases? If when you exhale carbon dioxide, and when you inhale oxygen, but when you're kissing, you're inhaling carbon dioxide, right? And you're both inhaling carbon dioxide, because you're inhaling the other person's exhale. So what does carbon dioxide and type of carbon dioxide feel like? I'll bet it makes you dreamy. I remember I used to go through a thing with carbon dioxide therapy back in the 70s, 80s. There was Peter Hogan used to do carbon dioxide therapy, and you would take carbon dioxide and you'd actually breathe it, and it would alter your thinking somewhat. So there is a spacey relationship that comes place chemically just from the exchange of gases.
Oh, I got to look that up, Armand.
Isn't that exchanging? It's really fascinating. Okay, so in as much we not only have cortisol, but we have other hormones. We have other neurotransmitters that play. What else?
Dopamine increases. We love our dopamine.
We do love dopamine. We'll do anything we can to get more dopamine, right?
So that increases, and of course that increases the pleasurable sensations. And there are many, many nerve endings on the tongue. So we are very exquisitely sensitive to all these sensations, and so it's very pleasurable. So, of course, dopamine goes up.
Dopamine is associated with all of the pleasures.
Yes.
Right? Okay. And then with it, we also get bonding.
Oxytocin goes up, too.
Yeah. So another of the another of the neurotransmitters is oxytocin. We've talked about that. Oxytocin, as in oxycodone, as in the pill oxycodone. Yes, yes, yes. As in, you know, what people take to get stoned. It's a morphine-like substance. Oxytocin, you know, you've heard of OxyContin, you know. These are pills that people take to kill pain. It's a drug. It's like it makes you feel stoned. Oxytocin is a bonding chemical, and it makes you feel like laying in the other person's arms. You know, so kissing increases oxytocin, increases dopamine, decreases cortisol, increases carbon dioxide intake, right? Exchanges salivas, gets you to deal with the cytomegalovirus, right? And helps you study phlegmatology. I think phlegmatology is a funny word for it, you know, because it has a phlegm in it. Phlegmatology. Even though it's spelled P-H-I-L, phlegmatology. I wonder if it has a root related to phlegm. P-H-E-L-G-M. Well, we don't have to look at it now. Okay, now, of course, kissing is not something that takes place all over the world, you know. In different parts of the world, they don't kiss at all. There's never been Japan, and I'll get to that. Others believe kissing is indeed an instinctive behavior, and it cites certain animal kissing-like behaviors as proof. Most animals rub nose with each other as a gesture of affection. Others like to pucker up like humans. Bonobos, for example, make up tons of excuses to exchange tongues. They lick each other's tongues. They do it to make up after fights, to comfort each other, to develop social bonds, and sometimes for no clear reason at all, just like us. Today, the most widely accepted theory of kissing is that humans do it because it helps us sniff out the quality of a mate. That's our biggest. While our faces are close enough, our pheromones talk to each other. And it's the way that we try to find ourselves the exact perfect mate. And remember, meanwhile, our brain's ventral tegmental area, which houses the reward and motivation system, is sending off messages of dopamine. So kissing sounds like a pretty good thing, don't you think? It sounds like the kind of thing that people could encourage and should encourage or try to build into your life, especially if you have a romance. Kissing is also a meditation. Boy, the sex and love are probably the Rodney Dangerfield of stress management. Because of all the negative energy we take in during the day, it has a tremendous positive benefit. Affection, kissing, sex. It's kind of like the good stuff, you know? And sex, sensuality, and sensual touch have profound effects on well-being. Kissing is an exciting excursion into the sensual. It stops the buzz of your mind. You know, if your mind is really, really busy, boom, pulls it to a stop. Let's stop thinking. It also has this, it's nature's way of opening the door to possible deeper experiences of sex and lovemaking. One wonders what happens to people with kissing. What happens? In the 19th century, anthropologist Cesare Lombroso originated and evolved from the maternal. He said it all started with the mother's kiss. And he supported that view by noting that the Japanese society before the 20th century was ignorant of the kiss except as applied by a mother for an infant. So before the 20th century, that means in 1898, nobody in Japan kissed anybody except mothers and children. What'd they do? How'd they make out? What'd they do?
But it kind of makes sense because they're a shy culture. Without stereotyping, but if you think about how important it is to keep your eyes down, to not show intimacy.
And never show your teeth. So there's always that thing about covering your teeth.
Right, so it's almost consistent, or it is consistent with maybe some of the other cultural
imperatives. Boy, I'm sure we're going to get in trouble with this one. But it does seem kind of interesting, okay? And in Africa and other, quote, uncivilized regions, It was commonly observed that neither husbands, wives, or lovers kissed one another. Nobody kissed. However, among the Greeks and Latins, kissing was common as when parents kissed their children or lovers and married persons kissed. The kiss in Western society has also been used in various religions and ceremonial acts, lip to lip, where the kiss has a sacramental value. So this man Crowley, the researcher, concluded that generally though kissing was prevalent in some form since primitive times, it received its chief development in the Western culture. Helen Fisher, by the way, you know, is a big researcher. Helen Fisher, whose book I love, called Why We Love, right? She's a lot of interest in kissing as applied to. She said there's evidence that men like sloppier kisses with more open mouth. And it's suggesting that what they're trying to do is force the testosterone to the woman so she will get turned on. So unconsciously, men have sloppier, wetter kisses than women very often would like to receive, is what she's suggesting. And she says this is unconscious on a man's part. He's just, you know, he's just saying, let me try to give you as much of this as possible so that it will turn you on more. More than 90% of human societies kiss. 90%. And 10% don't. Chimpanzees, bonobos, foxes lick each other's faces, birds tap their bills together, elephants put their trunks into one another's mouth. Do you know that? Trunk to mouth. And Charles Darwin used to write about kissing as a natural instinct. So, what's it like for you? What happens? Is it just because it feels good? Is it that we have this kind of exchange between each other that we go on doing it? And how many other contacts are there? And how do you feel about it? Have you changed? I wonder if people have changed in their role towards kissing. I wonder if this whole idea of germs... I was watching a young woman get out of the subway the other day, and she had with her, she had this child, and she was scolding the child. She said, I saw you touch that railing with your hand. You have to wash your hands now. You have to, don't touch anything. Don't touch yourself. And she was screaming at the kid because the kid touched a railing. And I was saying to myself, what must she feel about kissing her child? Right? If a child is convinced that germs have such possibility of killing you, you know, then what happens to kissing? Do we give it up? Is it an exchange of bodily fluids, you know? You have a condom on your tongue? Or what do you do? I mean, do you use mouth dams? What do you do? How do you kiss? Or do you give up doing it completely? Some people are turned off completely. I'd like to hear from you. 212-209-2900. We're going to take our calls later. We're going to be doing a few more, a little more on our research, and then we will come back to you, and we will take your calls, and we will also be taking a break today. We're going to take a short break and listen in for a little more. In a sample of 1,041 college students, researchers found that only 5 who had never experienced romantic kissing, and more than 200 that estimated having kissed more than 20 people. You know, how many people do you think you've kissed in your life? Isn't that an interesting thought? Can you possibly fathom how many people you've kissed? What the number would be? Kissing between sexual and romantic partners occurs in 90% of the cultures that we said. It's a part of the evolved courtship ritual. When people kiss, there's a rich and complicated exchange of information without which we would have to function very differently. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, my friends, much more. We'll be right back.
Only 2 things scare me, and 1 is nuclear war.
What's the other?
Excuse me?
What's the other thing that scares you?
Hi, this is Jamie.
Hi, this is Sarah from Brand Van 3000, and you're listening to
WBAI 99.5 FM.
New York?
New York.
See how relaxed you're getting?
Indeed.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
Rosa Passos, Besame Mucho. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We talk about science here on WBAI. We talk about the science of many different things. We're very concerned about what exchanges take place between people on the psychological level and the physical level. Talking about something like kissing sounds like it's just really something minor, but you had no idea that so much takes place, and it's so confusing to people. It's so difficult. The love kiss, Charles Fuster once wrote, rich in promise, bestows an intoxicating feeling of infinite happiness, courage, and youth, and therefore surpasses all the other earthly joys in subliminity. He also compares it to one's achievement in life. He says that it is the highest work of art, The loftiest reputation is nothing in comparison with the passionate kiss of a person who loves. You know, we all know that to be true. We all know that that exquisite feeling of that connection is true. And then we forget it. And then our mind takes it away. And we let it pass. And we don't remember it any longer. Do you remember? 212-209-2900. Let's hear some of your experiences with it, or some of your ideas about it. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello.
Hello there.
Oh, yes, Armand.
Hi there.
Monroe, hi.
Hey, Monroe.
I just want to add to your knowledge, there's a kiss on the hand, and you know what I mean?
Yes.
And there's a kiss on the cheek, and there's a kiss on the lips, and there's a...
Well, that's very, very important. That's right. Absolutely the
and
kiss.
And I just felt that, you know, you were carried away just by the concept of somehow the kiss on the lips. And in a way, I, you know, have done all three or four, you know, and there's also the kiss on the rear end even.
Okay, wait, Monroe, before you get there.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, don't go there, please.
No,
please
but
don't. Okay, but thank you, because, you know, one of the things that happened is I always enjoy hearing from you, but every now and then we get ready to pull the plug because you go somewhere that we don't want to go, okay? So before you go there, I want to thank you, because I think that's a very strong contribution you've made.
Yeah, well, it is, and I thank you, Armand, and I hope, I just wish you could help a lot of people at WBAI more, you know what I mean?
Yes, I certainly
you
am
can
doing,
have, I don't know how to...
You know me, Monroe. I'm doing all I can. Thank you for calling in. You know, Stephanie, it's a very interesting thing that one of the things we saw in all of our research on kissing, we never saw a mention of the kiss on the hand and the kiss on the cheek. It's very interesting that they didn't put that in, because it's a real gentle moment, you know? If
right.
You see, in the science of it, I studied in the science, they're all talking about the lip-to-lip exchange.
I think because of the chemistry that passes,
yeah.
I'm not sure it's going to pass through lips to hand.
Well, certainly you can feel it lip to hand. Certainly, for example...
The pleasure, things like that would come up.
No, and there's the monarch, you know, kissing the hand of the monarch, or kissing the hand of someone you love. There is something to it that's very special and gentle. And then kissing someone on the cheek. You know, there's that funny thing that Europeans do, the double cheek kiss.
Right.
Right? I mean, that we Americans don't do in general. And so when we travel to Europe and you kiss somebody on the cheek, they're always trying to kiss you on the other cheek. And you don't know what you're really supposed to do.
Yes.
There's a big difference in that experience. The double cheek versus the single cheek.
Well, other cultures, men kiss each other.
Sure.
That's right. That they do the double cheek kissing in other cultures, man to man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
212-209-2900. Thanks, Monroe. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
I want to say that I am 47 years old and 4 months ago started dating a man who makes me not miss anyone else's kisses. And maybe because he's very complimentary and is always telling me he loves me. But I hate feet. I even kiss his feet. I don't care. I just cannot get enough of kissing him. And I think the compliments that he pays, it makes me just want to kiss. And the special place that I like even more than right on the lips is right on the side of his mouth, where I can smell the sweet breath from his nostrils.
Wow. Boy, is that important stuff. Mind I ask, you said you were, how old were you?
47.
How old is he?
38.
Yeah, I was thinking that. My sense was that there was a very sweet smell of some other youth that is in there. So have you had this with men who are older?
I've kissed men who are older than me. My previous... maybe 5 years ago, I had a man who was 10 years older than me. And I enjoyed kissing him. Even though he smoked, I still enjoyed his kisses. But this guy is like no other.
Like none other.
Right.
And have you dated many men who are younger than you?
A few, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Usually not quite this young, but I have, yes.
Well, thank you very much. It's nice to know that people could have that kind of affection, but they do. They do. There is that feeling that people have where I want to kiss you wherever I can kiss you because you intoxicate me. And
exactly.
It sounds like you sound intoxicated.
Yes, very much.
Nice. And it's not fattening.
No, it's not.
Thanks for calling in. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's get another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi. Listen, I'm enjoying your show. However,
I'm glad.
However, a few minutes ago, you were talking about different cultures, and you said just before the 20th century that people in Japan didn't even kiss except mothers kissed children on the cheeks.
Uh-huh.
And then right after that, you said, but in Africa and other uncivilized cultures.
Now, oh, no, 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 no. I'm going to read this to you.
That's
not
what you
in Africa. No, 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 no. In uncivilized parts of Africa is what it said.
But that's not what you said, Armand.
Oh, really?
You didn't say that. You could play the tape back. Now, you may have meant that, but you said in Africa and other uncivilized cultures.
Let me see what it says here. Hold on a second. Because I was reading directly from something that was written.
Just
in Western societies, absolutely, I object too, and I'm glad you bring it to my attention. And that while in Africa and other uncivilized regions of Africa, it was commonly observed that neither husbands or wives or lovers kissed.
Okay.
Not that Africa is uncivilized.
Well, but if you play the tape...
I believe you.
In the meantime, all right.
And I apologize.
I just wanted to point out, I got very offended.
Well, very?
But
you know I'm not going to be judging like that.
All right, I just...
You know me better than that, don't you? You've been listening to this show for a long time.
You and all of BAI. I mean, I love the entire program.
You know I'm not going to do that.
Well,
I'm glad you called to clear it up. That's very important.
And I just would like to say in terms of that, I recently met a woman. Well, I've been trying to date this woman for 2 years. Well, a year and a half. I won't say 2 years. And I've fallen in love with her, and I haven't as much as even been able to touch her. But she knows that I'm in love with her, and I think she's beginning to warm up. I would love to kiss her. I've attempted to on a couple of occasions, but she hasn't let me. But
why not, do you know?
Well, I don't know if she's I don't really know why. I don't, you know, because I've invited her out on many occasions, and she hasn't taken it up. But I've invited her to... Funny you say, I've invited her to this play, the one that's running now in New York, the Tuskegee over the Airmen, and she may go. I think she's warming up a little bit.
Now, in the past, have you found yourself attracted to people who took a long time to warm up to you?
Not really. I haven't had that experience. I mean, I'm a little older now, so I don't know if that's a part of
it. So this person's really got your attention.
Oh, she has. She's really got my attention.
And how would you compare her age to your age?
Oh, she's a little younger than I, but we're not, I mean...
You're not years apart.
Not years apart, no.
Yeah, so the question is the following. What's your name, by the way?
My name is Michael.
Michael, so how is it that you feel this attraction for somebody... And you feel this attention, but she just doesn't know it or respond to it. Why don't you just ask her? I'm curious. And I'm not saying you should, but I'm curious. Why don't you just ask her and say, hey, do you notice I'm interested in you personally and I would like to go out with you?
Oh, Armand, I've said that to her on any number of... I say that to her as often as I can see her. And I think she's just starting to warm up. I mean, I think she's warming up, but...
She say I'm not interested?
No, she never said she wasn't interested. But her behavior acts as though she's, I could call her up and sometimes she would talk to me. And she was never rude or anything and never impolite, but she knows how I feel. But I think maybe she's just taking a long time. I've never had this happen.
Okay, well, you do sound smitten. We have a word, smitten.
Yeah, that's it. I'm very smitten with her.
Good.
And she's taller than me, and I love that. But I like the woman that called before and said she can't get enough of kissing this guy because he's so complimentary. I compliment her in every way I can possibly. I've bought her candy. I've done several things to show her that I care.
Well, that may not be warming her up. You see, that may not be doing the trick. And one of the things you might want to consider is the following. With some people, when you rush in too quickly, they put up a kind of an invisible wall because they don't feel safe. So if you find that giving the gifts and buying the candy and bringing the flowers and all of that doesn't work it well, sometimes it pays to back off and not bring the gifts. It doesn't mean you don't show up. But don't put as much forward.
No.
And maybe she could lean forward towards you.
I got you. But believe me, I've spaced this out. I've said it's been a year and a half.
That's quite a science.
I haven't. I don't buy candy every week or flowers every week.
You know what you're doing, Michael. I thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you for calling in.
Bye.
212-209-2900. A year and a half and not a kiss yet. But any day now. Any day. Tonight's the night. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. This is Sarah. I haven't spoken to you in a while.
Sarah.
I'm really enjoying your show today.
Thank you.
And one of the things that by the way, what you said actually was the so-called uncivilized countries in Africa.
That's
thank
you.
Said. And I guess you were reading it and you know, because I know how you are.
You know how I
yeah.
am.
But anyway,
thank you for defending my honor, Sarah.
Oh, of course. let's see. You guys have been talking a lot about the physical aspects of kissing.
Uh-huh.
And for me, kissing, well, making love in general, but kissing especially is like a spiritual experience and an emotional one. And I feel like there's an actual energy exchange that goes on. Especially if you kiss certain areas, like, and then, you know, I looked into it and I found that these areas are actually like what they call meridian points, you know, high energy points, like behind the ear, behind the knees, the bottom of the feet, tips of your fingers, your palms. Those are all like real high energy spots. And I go crazy when my partner kisses me behind the ears, and he likes it too. That's actually more sensitive than my lips. So I don't know. There seems to be some.
So
kind
you bring
of,
you bring to it another component, because can we ever separate the physical from the spiritual, from the emotional? Can we really separate it? Can we separate the hormones from the God self?
No.
Can we? You know, I don't know if you do separate it. Yeah, we talk about it as a science. And part of the reason that we talk about it as a science is because everybody else wants to talk about it in much more romantic tones. We like to make sense out of some of the things that people experience that they don't understand that they experience, you know.
Right.
But I'm in agreement with you. It's you really can't separate it.
And there's a certain science to spirituality. I mean, it's not all just a subjective thing. I mean, the energy transfers are real. That happen between people. I think that's the reason why, you know, you feel it differently when you kiss certain people. I know that, you know, I've the person I'm dating now is 58, and I'm 50. I've been with him for like 7 years, and before that, I was dating a gentleman who actually worked for BAI. He's passed away. Couple of years ago, but I know that it's totally different between these two gentlemen, and then, you know, the person I dated before him.
Well, you're not saying it's totally different. You're saying you're totally different.
Well, it's
your experience.
The feeling of kissing.
Yeah, your experience.
People are totally. I mean, they
sure.
have a whole other scenario
sure.
going on.
Sure, sure. You have a different scenario going on. You see, they do, but it's your response because you're the common element. See, you're the common element. It's you doing the kiss, and you could feel very differently towards one and the other.
Right. I understand what you're saying. But, I mean, what I feel back from them, you know, is different depending on who they are.
Sure.
Well, thank you very much, Armand.
Sarah, nice to hear from you. Nice to hear from you, and thank you once again.
Okay, bye-bye.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Every now and then here on WBAI, well, we are covering some of this stuff that WBAI covers, trying to bring to you, oh boy, I just saw Michael Moore's new film, you know, about capitalism. It's called Capitalism. It's mind-boggling. It talks about what took place over the last couple of years with this supposed bailout. And WBAI brings you, I mean, all the Michael Moore-ish stuff and other stuff that we do here, and we fight. So it all sounds very serious and very heavy. But underneath it, you know, it's a forum for people. And people like you, and it's great that you get a chance to join us on the phone every now and then. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Hello, Armand. How are you?
I'm good. Who is this?
My name's Chandra.
Hello, Chandra. Chandra.
Hi.
Hi there.
I wanted to ask you, do you think if it's more of the atmosphere and the ambiance that gets, like, the cool little warm fuzzies going, or if the warm fuzzies are already incorporated in our bodies? Because I remember the very first time I kissed my now fiance, I mean, I felt it all the way down to my toes, and I still get to there, but I'm wondering if it has anything to do with it.
Having to do with the ambience, meaning where you are at the moment? Or was it the fact that it was brand new and it was the first time, and the two of you met like electric and you kissed each other and, you know, all the fire went off, and now when you kiss, it's not as strong? You don't...
When we kiss, it's equally as strong, but the very first time, I expected, you know, from listening to the program, I'd expect it to be like, have lessened over time, and it's still just as much.
I imagine that it is. I imagine what you're saying is that sometimes it maintains... How long have you been with this person?
A year and a half.
Okay. Good for you. So I'm glad you're still enjoying it.
Thank you.
Should it ever wane, it doesn't mean you've fallen out of love. It just means you've fallen out of chemistry. You know?
And do you get back to the chemistry?
You get it back, yes.
Oh, wow. I thought maybe sometimes that, you know, the chemistry would be between two people already linked up and then they find each other and then that's how it
changes. But, you know, see, conscious couples... And it's very hard to find conscious couples. But conscious couples see the separation that's built in. They see the chemistry change. They see themselves drifting apart. And they work. They do what's necessary to try to stay together, to honor each other. So when you've got that kind of commitment from a partner, it's amazing. It's amazing. And people can have that. A lot of people just like to cut and run. They say, oh, it's getting uncomfortable. I think I'll leave. Other people stay in there. And they fight.
You have to.
Well, you don't have to, but if you do, it's really exquisite. Thanks for calling in, Chandra.
Thank you so much, Armand. Have a beautiful day.
Thank you. Got time for one more call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hi. My name is Katya. I just started listening to the show. I'm a new listener, but I was fascinated. I have three children. What you said about the gases when you breathe out.
Yes, isn't that fascinating?
Well, my third child, he likes to go to sleep. He puts both hands, he's like cup his hands together around my nose, and he likes to breathe the same air I breathe.
He wants to breathe your exhale. That's interesting.
And I was fascinated. It was the first time I heard anything, you know, validating that. And I thought, oh, my goodness, I don't know if it's healthy for him to breathe in the air that I... if it's healthy for him. But he loves it. He's 3 and a half. He's been doing that, you know, since he could put his hand around my nose. And I was fascinated, and I had to call when you mentioned that.
Good. Well, I can't mention whether I think it's good or bad that a child becomes dependent on his mother's exhale. You know, I don't know it, but I do know the following. I do know that there are mosquitoes in life who track us down by our exhale. You know, they could just catch our exhale, and it's because of the carbon dioxide that they catch it. And that there are certain things in our exhale that is attractive to people. It sets certain things off.
And my first child... I used when she was a baby, and I finished nursing her and put her in a crib, and she'll cry. So I put my face close to her nose, and I breathe, and she liked that. And I put her in the crib, and then she wouldn't cry, and the transition will be fine. So,
you must have some breath. I tell you. Listen, we have to be going. Katya, I want to thank you for calling in.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Well, it always gets a little... validated every time we search. We're going to have to be going, my friends. We will be back with you next week, and we'll be doing more explorations. And until then, go to thepositivemind.com if you want, and you could send us an email and tell us what you suggest for future shows. Be back with you.
The Left Forum is coming. Join thousands of people for the largest annual conference of the U.S. and international left.
From Friday, March 19th through Sunday, March 21st, come and be part of the dialogue with an amazing diversity of activists from around the world.
With more than 200 panels and 600 speakers, you can listen, talk, and exchange ideas, as well as challenge the tone of an administration that has failed to deliver justice, hope, or change.
And for the first time, Reverend Jesse Jackson and Noam Chomsky will come together in the same conference. Jackson as the keynote speaker and Chomsky addressing the closing plenary session.
The Left Forum is an annual gathering that affirms the diversity of left, progressive, and radical voices.
Friday, March 19th through Sunday, March 21st at Pace University in downtown Manhattan.
For more information or early registration, call
212-817-2002 or log on to www.leftforum.org. See you there.
This is Phil Donahue. And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5.
Perennial presidential hopeful, consumer advocate, and author Ralph Nader will be speaking in New York on Friday, March 12th at the Unitarian All Souls Church at 7 p.m. Mr. Nader will be discussing his latest book, Only the Super Rich Can Save Us, as well as covering the major national news stories such as healthcare, Obama's war in Afghanistan, and the continued war upon the people of Iraq. Again, it all takes place this Friday, March 12th at 7 p.m. at the Unitarian All Souls Church, which is located at 1157 Lexington Avenue at 80th Street in Manhattan. This is a free event. Yep, you heard right. Free and open to the public. My advice, arrive early.
And you're tuned to listener-supported, commercial-free, community radio, WBAI in New York, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. My name is Michael G. Haskins, your radio host.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.